You may begin.
And Tanya, may, before we start, have you connected the audio?
Yes.
Thank you very much. Shall I do a roll call for you, Stefan?
Okay, are we able to start? I didn't hear the operator, sorry. Yes, please do so, Glenn.
Yes, we are. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. This is the council call on the 15th of December. And on the line we have Jeff Newman, Ching Chow, Mason Cole, Joef Kieran, Stefan van Gelder, Thomas Rickert in the contracted party house. In the non-contracted party house, we have John Berard. Apologies from Zaid Jamil, and he has given his proxy to John Berard. David Taylor, Osvaldo Nova, Wolf Ulrich Knoben, Bill Drake, Wendy Seltzer, Rafik Damak, Joy Lidicott, and on the Adobe Connect we have Wolfgang Kleinwächter, but I do not see him on the call yet. And we have Lanre Adaji. Mary Wong has sent her apologies, and her proxy goes to William Drake. Brian Winterfeld has just let us know that he will be a bit late for the call. For staff, we have Liz Gaster, David Olive, Margie Milam, Julie Headland, Barry Cobb, apologies from Marika Koenig, and myself, Glenda Saint-Jury. Have I left off anybody?
Yes, Glenn, Carlos Aguirre is here.
I'm sorry, Carlos, yes, you are here. Thank you, Carlos.
Thank you.
With that, over to you, thank you. And Wolfgang has just joined the call. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Welcome, everyone, to our GNSO Council call. And we will move straight to 1.2, updates of statements of interest. Mason Cole has sent in an update. And just to give you all a reminder of the message that Glenn sent to the list a few days ago, reminding us of the requirement to update our statements of interests once a year if possible. There is now an online method for doing so, which I've not been able to get to work yet because I don't have the required passcodes. But if everyone can try and contact Glenn if you need to update your SOIs to get your passcodes, and hopefully that will be able to be done quite quickly. Are there any requests to review or amend the agenda at this time?
Stefan, David here.
David.
Yeah, I've pinged an email. It's just I'm going to be sporadic on this call, I'm afraid, because I'm getting to an airport and flying in about an hour and a half. So if the UDRP one could be fairly early on rather than later, that would certainly be better for me.
Yes, David, I did. I've just seen your email. So if no one objects, we will move UDRP to item 3 to accommodate David's plane times. Is that okay for everybody? Hearing no objections, we'll do that, David. So are there any further requests for amendments to the agenda? Hearing nothing, you have the minutes of the previous meeting with the link provided on the agenda, and we will move straight into item 2, which is our usual look at the pending projects list, which has not moved in terms of numbers of projects at all since the last meeting. So as you can see in the four main categories that we list, GNSO activities still 9 items, other activities still 10 items, joint working groups still 7 of them, and outstanding recommendations still 2. Any comments on this item? Hearing none, we'll move to item 4 before doing item 3. And this item is looking at the UDRP and the possibility of a review of that policy. This is something that we've been talking about for a while, so much so that we looked at a motion last meeting, which was put forward by Jeff and which was deferred from that meeting. So, Jeff, can you take us through the motion again, please?
Sure. Let me say, take you through. Do you mean read it, or do you want me to just give background?
Yeah, if you can read it, and if you have anything else to say, that's fine. But if you can read it, that would be useful.
Okay. I mean, I got to put on my glasses here. Okay, so I'm going to read it without the friendly amendment first. So it says, whereas the registration of these policies working group submitted a final report to the GNSO Council on May 29, 2010, recommending an issue report on the current state of the UDRP, considering both A, how the UDRP has addressed the problem of cyber squatting to date and any insufficiencies, inequalities associated with the process, and B, whether the definition of cyber squatting inherent within the existing UDRP language needs to be reviewed or updated, and whereas on February 3rd, 2011, the GNSO Council requested an issue report in accordance with the recommendations on the Registration Abuse Policies Working Group, and whereas a preliminary issue report was published on May 27, 2011, and series of webinars and workshops were held soliciting public comment to allow for the ICANN community to provide feedback on the analysis and recommendations contained therein, and whereas a final issue report was published on October 3, 2011, in which ICANN staff recommended the GNSO Council consider the perspective of the majority of the ICANN community and the advice of the Government Advisory Committee and the At-Large Advisory Committee, and that a, quote, a PDP be delayed until after the new GTLD Uniform Rapid Suspension System has been in place, has been in operation for at least 18 months, to allow the policy process to be informed by data regarding the effectiveness of the URS, which was modeled on the UDRP to address the problem of cyber squatting. Resolve. The GNSO Council approved the initiation of a PDP and the establishment of a working group on recommendation number 7 of the IRTP Part B working group concerning the requirement to lock a domain name subject to UDRP proceedings, which the GNSO Council at its meeting on 22nd May 2011 received and agreed to consider when it takes up consideration of the final issue report on the current state of the UDRP. Resolve further that the GNSO Council requests a new issue report on the current state of all rights protection mechanisms implemented for both existing and new GTLDs, including but not limited to the UDRP and URS, should be delivered to the GNSO Council by no later than 18 months following the delegation and launch of the first new GTLD. So that's what it says. Some of these words are a little bit different than what I recall the motion to be. And I'm not sure why.
You're reading off the...
I was reading off of Adobe, and the motion at the end, it should say following the delegation of the first new GTLD, not delegation and launch. There's
on the wiki, it says delegation and launch as well.
Right.
I'm not sure what's gone wrong.
Right, and then it says two on the resolve clause. It says resolve for the GNSO Council request, and there's two anews in there. Because launch is not any kind of defined term, and so I don't, if that was in there, I'm kind of, that means two different things, or it can mean, launch can mean a whole bunch of different things.
What was the wording that you'd propose, Jeff? Just to
18 months following, it should be 18 months following the delegation of the first new GTLD.
So this is just a typo?
Yeah, from my motion, yeah.
Okay. Who's manning the Adobe tonight? Is it you, Margie? It must be you.
Yeah, it's me, Margie, and I I apologize. This came from Marika posted it, and I believe she picked it up from the motions page on the wiki. No, I've just taken out the word and launch.
Okay. And then if we could, the resolve further, the Genius of Council request, it should be just one anew.
Oh, yeah, I see that. Okay.
Okay, thanks. Good eyes. Well done. Glad you got your glasses on, Jeff. So we have a proposed amendment to this motion that's been put forward by the IPC and David. The amendment, David, do you want to read the amendment just to make sure that it's the one that you proposed?
I'm happy for you to read it because it's a bit noisy in this airport, but when I read it on the agenda, it was the one, so...
It reads, resolved further, the GNSO Council requests a new issue report on the current state of all rights protection mechanisms implemented for both existing and new GTLDs, including but not limited to the UDRP and URS, should be prepared with staff commencing the drafting of this report 18, in brackets, 1-8 months after the publication of at least 100 UDRP or URS that cover at least 10 new GTLDs. Such reports should be delivered to the GNSO Council within 4, in brackets, number 4, months of that trigger date.
That's it.
Is that correct?
Yep. That's correct. I've been discussing with Jeff, the only difference on that which we had was it should have read and 100. So at least 100 UDRP decisions and 100 URS.
Okay, that is a big difference. Margie, can you please update that on the Adobe?
Yeah, can you repeat that one more time?
It's 100 UDRPs and URS, not or URS. Thank you, Margie. Yeah, that's it. Well done. So, Jeff and Wolf, do you accept this amendment as friendly?
No, this is Jeff. I sent around an email to the council list a couple days ago, discussed this with the registries, and for the reasons in that email, we cannot accept that as a friendly amendment. And I explained in the email as to why that would cause such a, you know, we've already compromised. The registries believe we've compromised on delaying it 18 months, which really truly means, if you look, it's 18 months from the delegation, which, according to the timeline I put forward, really delays the review for 3.5 years from today. So I did the timeline there. Basically, the soonest we would initiate a full PDP, or the council would vote to approve a PDP, would be Q1 or Q2 2015, which is already, with 18 months after the delegation, we think, a long period of time. We also then did an analysis of what the amendment would do, and the amendment says 18 months from the publication of 100 decisions of each one. So that would delay it out, we think, until Q2 of 2016, which is 4.5 years from now. So for those reasons, and, you know, the registries wanted, again, this is the registries. It's not just me, and I've gotten some comments from people. I've heard through the grapevine that this is Jeff Newman, his initiative. It has nothing to do with me. It's the registries as a group. We've discussed this. You know, the registries, when we discussed it, felt like we were compromising. We said, okay, look, it's not just the UDRP, but we also want to include all the other trademark rights protection mechanisms, because that's what the IPC and the GAC had asked for. And we feel like, because we added that, now the IPC came back and said, well, since you've added that, now you need to delay it another 18 months, or delay it even more, because now we have to have sufficient data. And while we certainly agree with the notion that you need to have sufficient data to do an analysis, we're not sure that that data needs to be in, or all of that data needs to be in by the time you write a preliminary issue report, because really the group that's going to look at the data is the working group that's set up in a PDP process. Not necessarily, we feel like you could derive enough issues within 18 months to at least start the process, and data collection can be part of the working group activity. So for all those reasons, we can't accept that as friendly.
Okay. That means we'll be voting on the amendment first. Let me open it up for discussion before we take a vote on that amendment. I see John has his hand up.
Thank you, Stefan.
I'm putting my hand up as well, Stefan, but I'm not on Adobe.
We're speaking to the proposed amendment?
Yes.
Okay.
Both the motion and the amendment. But we're covering the amendment first.
Okay. The thing that I like about David's proposed amendment is the trigger mechanism of collected data. I appreciate Jeff's comments that in 18 months, certainly we should have enough to go on. With David's proposed amendment, we would have enough to go on. But I'm also sensitive to the length of time that we would be how far out we'd be pushing this. And, I'm going to try and balance the two. Jeff, if you could just speak a little bit more to what it is you think we will know that gives you the registries, not the Newman proposal here, confidence that we will have enough data to make a serious decision.
Jeff, do you want to answer that, and then I'll switch to David?
Sure. So on that, John, you know, we don't obviously know whether we'll have that data at that time, but we also discussed the possibility that a lack of data could be telling as well. In other words, if we only have five URS decisions and 10 UDRP decisions in 18 months, that could tell us that, hey, maybe the rights protection mechanisms employed at the beginning actually worked. Conversely, if we had 10,000 URS decisions and 5 UDRP decisions, that could tell us that maybe the URS is working and actually ended the need to actually have a UDRP. But I'm making that up, and who knows what that's the real conclusion. But to me, to put a hard number out there is if that's going to be sufficient or not sufficient, and I think what you'll hear from David is 100 decisions probably isn't even sufficient. But I would accept, or not I, the registries would accept something that was like the earlier, but I'm not sure the IPC would go for this, the earlier of that number of decisions or 18 months. In other words, if we get that amount of decisions within 5 months or 6 months, then we should start the preliminary issue report then, as opposed to waiting 18 months. So if you changed it to say the earlier of that number of decisions and 18 months, I think we would be covered and the registries would accept that. But I know, or I've talked to people in the IPC, and they do not want it any shorter than 18 months out there. And the point I have there is, let's make up our mind. Do we want the time limit or do we want the data? If we want the data, let's make the motion based on the data. If we want the time, let's base the motion on the time.
Okay. David.
Sure. Thanks, Stefan. Yeah, and we were trying to work out and get the friendly with Jeff over the last week, so that's where we unfortunately didn't succeed. But, yeah, I mean, that's the issue, and John picks up on it. We just want to make sure there's sufficient data. If we're going to do this thing, we should do it properly, and we should make sure we've got the data which we can look at it, because, if you know, we're looking at a UDRP here and saying we're going to review the UDRP, and we've got 30,000 decisions, which I think makes it reviewable. But if you look at the URS with 50 decisions or something there, and we start saying, yes, let's look how the URS is intertwining with the UDRP, the procedural substantive relationship, etc., we just start struggling because there's so little data. So that was the idea behind trying to make sure we've got something in there which was sufficient. So yes, as Jeff says, we were talking about trying to move it to 1,000, and because that, again, 100 is like the de minimis of just saying let's make sure we've got something which we can talk about. So I agree, and exactly that's the point. I was trying to get the friendly in so that we were happy with it, but we don't want to be bringing the timetable. We're certainly not looking to delay things. That's not the objective. It was just really let's get the right sort of data there that we can do something with. And I suppose the other point, certainly on an IPC side, is that our view is we should be, you know, that this is we should be looking at the cause of cyber swatting, really. That's the essential thing, and that's where this whole thing came from. And that seems to me what we should be looking at. And then this relationship URS-UDRP, and then looking at UDRP. So it's kind of going around the wrong way, but we were just trying to get it right. Unfortunately, I haven't got it quite right on the motion.
Thank you, David. Any further comments? Hearing or seeing none, any objection to doing a voice vote on the unfriendly amendment? Glenn, please do a voice vote on this amendment.
I'll do that for you, Stefan. All those in favour of the amendment, please say aye.
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 Okay.
Oh. Are there any more in favour?
A. Osvaldo Novoa.
All those who are not in favour of the amendment, please say nay.
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 Stefan, maybe it would be a good thing to do a roll call vote.
I was going to say, you're going to need names. Let's do a roll call vote. It's going to be simpler. Sorry,
David Taylor.
Yep. Yes.
Ching Chow?
Vote.
No. Is that so? Rafik
no.
Damek? Rafik? Rafik, I'll come back to you, Rafik. Jonathan Robinson is absent unless he has joined in the meantime, which I don't think.
I think, Glenn, I think he submitted a proxy, didn't he? David did on his app.
He sent a proxy for you, Jeff?
I believe he did. I mean, I saw it, so...
Okay, yes, fine. Will you vote for him, please?
No is the answer.
Thank you. Vote for Rick Nobin?
Yes.
Wendy Seltzer?
No.
Thomas Rickert?
No.
Stefan Van Velde?
No.
Mary Wong?
No.
She has, her proxy goes to Bill Drake, and it's no?
Correct.
Lanray Agy?
No.
Mason Cole?
No.
Bill Drake?
No.
Oswaldo Nova?
Yes.
Brian Winterfeld?
Yes.
Yoav Kieran?
No.
Jeff Newman?
No.
Joy Lidicott? Joy? I'll come back to you. John Berard for Zahid Jamil?
Yes, for Zahid.
And for yourself, John?
Yes, as well.
Wolfgang Kleinbester?
No.
Rafik Damak, I'm coming back to you.
No.
And Joy Lidicott. Lidicott, sorry.
Thank you, Glenn. My vote is no.
There are 6 no votes in the non-contracted party house. So... And there are eight no votes in the contracted party house. There are 6 votes in favor in the contracted party house, in the non-contracted party house. So it does not pass.
Thank you, Glenn. So we'll now, Glenn, there's a comment from Wendy that counted 7 no's in the non-contracted party house.
bear with Glenn for five more seconds.
Indeed, seven, sorry. Thank you, Wendy.
That doesn't change the outcome.
No.
Thank you, Wendy, for spotting that. So let's move to the motion itself. Any further discussion on the motion before we move to vote on it?
This is
Wendy.
Yes, this is Wendy. I'd like to ask, after the discussion of timing, whether it would be friendly to shorten the time frame from 18 to 12 months following the delegation of the first new GTLD. As you know, the non-commercial stakeholders have been eager to get these reviews started promptly.
So you are suggesting that we, I'm trying to find it in the motion itself.
This is in resolved number
right,
two.
Resolved two at the end, no later than 12 instead of 18 months.
That's correct.
And you are proposing that as a friendly amendment. Jeff, Wolf, would that be accepted as friendly?
The registries, this is Jeff, the registries would not accept that as friendly. The registries were very sensitive to the comments from the GAC and the ELAC and to the staff recommendation, and that had recommended 18 months, and so that's what the registries believe should be in there.
Okay. Can I ask Margie to remove David's proposed amendment now that we've voted on it? That will just help my clarity of vision. Thank you. And we will then have to vote on...
This is Wendy, and I withdraw the suggestion.
Thank you, Wendy. Jeff?
Yeah, Wendy also made a comment on the chat, which I think she's right, which is on the first resolve clause. It should say that the GNSL approves instead of approved, because I think that's a typo.
Thanks to you both for spotting that. Any further discussion? Okay, let's do a roll call vote on this one as well, just to keep things even.
Stefan, this is Glenn. I think perhaps we should vote separately on each of the resolved clauses because there is a difference in threshold. The one is an initiation of a PDP.
Uh-huh.
And the second resolve clause is a new issues report. And the threshold for initiation of a PDP is 33% of each house or 66% of one house. And for an issues report, it is 25% in both houses or 50% in one house.
Yes, Glenn, that makes perfect sense. Please proceed in that fashion.
Thank you.
Stefan, could I put my hand up quickly for a query? Sorry.
Yes, David, please go ahead.
Just a query to Jeff on this. Just wondering, if, because we've taken out the potential friendly, how does staff know when to start the report for the delivery date on this as it stands?
Well, I would think staff would have to know and budget the appropriate amount of time so that I could deliver it within 18 months. So I'm assuming, and maybe we can let Margie answer this, but I'm assuming they'll figure out the appropriate time to start drafting the report so that they can have it delivered by 18 months.
Margie, is there a comment that you want to make?
Yes, that's correct. I mean, we will include it on the GNSL project list and track it and make sure we meet that deadline. So we'll keep that as one of our action items.
Okay, David?
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. So, Glenn, back to the vote.
Certainly. Rafik Damat?
We are voting, just to make that clear for everyone, we're voting only on the first resolved clause now.
Rafik Damat? Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Jonathan Robinson? Jeff Newman for Jonathan Robinson, please.
He says yes.
David Taylor? David?
Sorry, just coming off mute. No.
Stefan van Gelder?
Yes.
Mason Cole?
Yes.
Wolf Ulrich Knoben?
Yes.
Ching Chow?
Yes.
Lanre Ajayi?
Yes.
Brian Winterfeld?
No.
Joyce Karen?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nova?
Yes.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter? Wolfgang? I'll come back to him. Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
John Berard?
Yes.
Wendy Salsa?
Yes.
For Mary Wong, Bill Drake, please?
Yes.
Zahid Jamil?
For Zahid, yes.
Thank you. Joy Lidicott?
Yes.
William Drake, for yourself?
Yes, myself.
Wolfgang Kleinwächter?
Yes.
We have 7 yes votes in the contracted party house.
Glenn?
Yes.
Rafik, you forgot me.
Yes, sorry, Rafik, you have not voted.
So it's yes.
Is yours yes?
Yes.
And David Taylor? David, are you on mute?
I am. I'm just off it, so it's no.
Is it no? Thank you. In the contracted party house, we have 7 yes votes. In the non-contracted party house, we have 11 yes votes and 2 no votes.
So we have the threshold.
So we have the threshold of 66%, yes.
We even have 33, I think.
We, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So that first resolve passes. Let's move to our second resolve clause and vote on that, please, Glenn.
Yes. In a minute.
The threshold for this is 25% in both houses or a majority in one.
Right. Wolfgang Kleinwächter. Wolfgang?
Yep.
What is your vote for the second resolved clause? Zahid Jamil, John Berard, will you please vote for Zahid?
For Zahid, yes, and for me, yes.
Mary Wong?
Yes.
Vote for? Jeff Newman?
Yes.
Wendy Salsa?
Yes.
Joy Lidicott?
Yes.
Ron Winterfeld?
Yes.
Thomas Rickert?
Yes.
Rafik Damak?
Yes.
Stefan van Gelder?
Yes.
William Drake?
Yes.
Mason Cole?
Yes.
Orphel Knobin?
Yes.
Jonathan Robin, Jeff for Jonathan Robinson, please.
Yes.
Ching Chow?
Yes.
David Taylor?
No.
Osvaldo Nova?
Yes.
Joyce Karen?
Yes.
Lanre Ajayi, sorry.
Yes.
And I still need a vote from Wolfgang Kleinwächter.
A problem with his phone, apparently.
Yes, you know, I had a problem with my phone already for the second time.
Okay.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, I can hear you. Thank you, Wolfgang. Okay.
So I vote with yes, and I did send it just via the Adobe.
Thank you very much. So the results are that this result clause passes. There are 12 votes in favor in the non-contracted party house, one against, and in the contracted party house, 7 votes in favor. That's 100%. Thank you, Stefan.
Thank you very much, Glenn. And we will move straight back to item 3. David, are you able to stay with us or not? And if not, have you made arrangements for someone to vote on this item in your stead?
Thanks, Stefan. I'm going to stay with you as long as I can and as long as I don't take my phone off me going through the customs. So I'm still here.
Okay, thanks. We'll try and work through this as fast as we can, although can't make any promises. But so we are going back to the Outreach Task Force Charter, and I'll make the introduction very short. We have a motion on the table. It's one that was made by John. It has not been seconded yet. Is someone willing to second the motion? We can't proceed without that. Sorry, is someone willing to second this motion?
Stefan, this is John. I have been unable to find someone to second this motion.
Okay. And no one's willing to step forward now? In which case, John, I'm sorry, we won't be able to consider this motion at this meeting.
Goodness, and I had so hoped to be able to speak at great length.
Well, I can let you speak at great length. That's no problem. It's just I can't proceed with a vote on the motion itself. But if you want to speak, by all means do so.
No, not at all. I accept the silence of the crowd.
Okay, thank you. So, David, we can release you if you need to go. Thanks for being with us so long, and have a safe flight. And we'll move to item 5.
Hey, Stefan, this is Jeff. I think there's one more motion on the table.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. I hope, David, you can stay with us for that. Sorry, I missed that. That motion is on the jig, and there's a proposal there for both the GNSO and CCNSO councils to direct their chairs to send a letter to the ICANN board. There is a full description in the motion itself and links to the various minutes and past resolutions and past history for this, and there is also a copy of the letter itself in the motion. Because it's very long, I propose not to read through this motion and not to ask Ching to read through it. If someone does want this motion to be read through, please speak up now. Okay. In which case, let me open it up for discussion on this motion, please.
Stefan, this is Ching.
Yes, Ching.
Can I jump in?
Yes, please.
Yes. Sure. I also seeking for your permission. I'm getting Edmund, who is the chair of the JIG, to join our call. So I'm just wondering if he's here and he would like to just to elaborate on what's on the table.
Yes, sir. Unless there's any opposition to Edmund joining the call, I think that would be a great idea. Edmund, if you're on the call, thanks for making that effort. And please make any comments you wish.
Hi, Stefan. Thank you, Stefan. This is Edmund. I got on the call. I think just to if there are any questions, but a couple of things, I guess, just to highlight. I think mainly the idea, at least the discussion from the JIG, was quite clear that we felt there needs to be some follow-up from the board resolution in August, and this letter reflects that follow-up, especially on urging the board to move forward more quickly on the single character IDN PLDs, which has gone quite gone through quite a number of community discussions, and there has been consistent response to allow it to go forward, and but it is so far hasn't seen actual movement. So that's the sort of background for the proposed resolution.
Thanks, Edmund. Any comments, questions, please? Hearing or seeing none, we will proceed on a vote. Let's do a roll call vote on this one as well, Glenn. Please.
Architect, will you now? On motion three, Wolfgang Kleinwester?
Yes.
John Berard?
Yes, and yes for Zahid as well.
Thank you. Jeff Newman?
Yes, and for Jonathan Robinson, yes as well.
Thank you. Mason Cole?
Yes.
Mary Wong, Bill Drake for Mary Wong?
Yes.
Lanre Ijayi?
Yes.
Osvaldo Nova?
Yes.
Bill Drake for yourself?
Yes.
Ting Chao?
Yes.
David Taylor?
Yes.
Paul Fulrich Knoben? Paul Fulrich? Wendy Seltzer?
Yes.
Rafik Damat?
Yes.
Thomas Ricard?
Yes.
Ryan Winterfeld?
Yes.
Joyce Karen?
Yes.
Joy Lidicott?
Yes.
Paul Fulrich, can you hear me?
Yes, I was on mute, yes.
Thank you. And Stefan van Gelder?
Yes.
It passes unanimously, Stefan. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Glenn. We'll Edmund, thanks again for joining the call. And we'll now move on to item six, which is an update on the recent hearings that no doubt all of you have either read or heard about that have happened in the U.S. in the past few days. Kurt Pritz has been giving testimony on ICANN's behalf, I believe, and I think we have Kurt with us today to give us an update on what has happened there. So, Kurt, if you're with us, thanks for being with us and taking the time to be with us, and please go ahead.
Well, thank you, everyone. I think it might there were two sets of hearings, one in front of the Senate Full Commerce Committee last week, that asked some specific questions, you know, that was targeted at some specific questions regarding defensive registration costs and costs to trademark owners. And then there was a hearing this week before a House subcommittee on commerce that that didn't really have anything specific in its title, but was more general in nature. So you know, I'll give you a few bon mots and encourage questions, but I think it'd probably be better for somebody else that was witnessing rather than me who was talking to report on what transpired, because they probably have a more objective view and a clearer view than me, whose memory is all quite foggy about the thing. So in the Senate hearing, it was sort of lightly attended. The senator from Minnesota, Klobuchar, asked most of the questions, and Senator Ayotte from New Hampshire asked several, but I think four or five senators all told participated fully. Senator Rockefeller, who chairs the committee, introduced the hearing with some commerce and we all better get used to dot hotel and dot something else. So that was a strong signal to me that somebody, you know, even older than me could adjust to change. So that was a good sign. But then signaled that we have to do this very cautiously going forward. And so I think the Senate hearing was very well balanced in that they were seeking information to make their own opinions after the hearing that the potential cost to trademark holders had been appropriately taken into account in the development of the new GTLD process. So I found the questions constructive, and I thought the senators were listening, and I thought that the discussion was balanced. The primary antagonist to new GTLDs at these hearings was the National Advertisers Association. It's ANA, but I forget exactly what it stands for. And they primarily brought up the issue of defensive registration. That was the comments of the senator from Maine. So I thought that was objective and went fairly well. In the House hearing that happened this week, I thought the questions to ICANN were more hostile, and there was participation probably by 10 congressmen and women each who asked questions, and two of them specifically, congresswomen from California, specifically asked that. Asked ICANN to commit to a delay in the process and, you know, skiing down what the round might be. And we answered that. We weren't doing that. I think there's a quote in Advertising Age, I think that was my answer to that question. So I think that's the most important thing, and that they were at the end probably not satisfied. And after a very, very, very brief review of all the work that went into new GTLDs, and are going to take that back and discuss what they might do. So, you know, I don't know. I'd much rather leave it for you to either watch the thing online or get the opinion of others rather than me. I was too much in the middle of it.
Okay.
It was fun and exciting.
Thanks, Kurt, for that update. Let me open it up to questions. I'll put myself in the queue. Does anyone else want to? Please, if you do, please raise your hands or speak up if you're not on Adobe. Kurt, this is obviously a difficult question, but one I feel I must ask. Do you get a sense that there may be moves to delay the launch of the program currently scheduled for January the 12th?
ask the question again, Stefan.
Do you feel that there's any risk that the program will be delayed?
Well, I think the risk is above zero. I think that I know that the Department of Commerce made, after the Senate hearing, made a very, very strong public statement that the reputation of the multi-stakeholder model is wrapped up in this too, and to take all the work that's been done over the years, the very careful work, and unravel it. With a delay at this point, would not only disserve the new GTLD program and all the people that worked on it, but would also disserve the multi-stakeholder model. And the Department of Commerce will not do. So after the close of the Senate hearing, the Department of Commerce came out publicly and said they were not going to delay the process.
Okay, thanks very much. Any further questions for Kurt, please? Okay. Hearing none, thank you very much for that update, Kurt. And I think you're still on for the next agenda item, which is an update on the JAS working group, and more specifically with respect to the very recent board resolution addressing the JAS recommendations. I think there was some significant progress there made there that you are about to tell us about, Kurt.
Yeah. So because I get to go on agenda items consecutively, I just want to go back to the last one and say, to those of you who listened, I hope I conveyed that it was the hard work of the volunteers that got the new GTLD program to where it was, and conveyed the amount of work that was done, particularly by the GNSO since 2005 in developing a policy and then, you know, refining that policy through the implementation plan and the formulation of, you know, all the groups that were formed in making that. And, you know, a big part of defending the new GTLD program and, is in the record that we've built together and doing all this work in this bottom-up style. So, I hope I conveyed that in my statements. So on JAS, Dakar, the board resolved two things. One is it formed a working group, a board working group, that was charged with overseeing the development of an applicant support program, taking into account the JAS final report and other input making that operational. And the second part of the resolution was that the CEO was directed to do the work to actually make an implementation plan. So everybody's been working very hard on this, and the board working group is chaired by Chris Despain, and it has Mike Silber and George Sadowski and Bertrand and Sebastian de la Chapelle and Sebastian Bachelet, and also had Katim while Katim was still on the board. And as you know, the board put together the gravamen or gist of a JAS support program in Dakar, and staff worked with consultants and others to flesh that out. And the result of that is a program that floated to you guys, sent to you guys on the council prior to publication. We're going to make an official posting of that plan either, tomorrow or Monday. And I'll give you the gist of what it is. But for those of you who are interested, I'm sure you've already read the documents. And
So procedurally, the time going forward, and then after we developed this plan, we had a meeting of the between those board members and a subgroup of JAS members, and you guys can help me on the phone, but it was Avery, Rafiq, Sintra, and Alan. And so there was a meeting among those group where the draft form of what you were sent was published and reviewed. So that group of 4JS members had some comments. Admittedly, they hadn't had too much, you know, they had a day or so, I think, to read the documents first, and had some comments, and recommended going forward that we post this as the applicant support plan with some changes, and we we publish it for comments. So that's what we're going to do. And so how do we make this all work and still make it implementable in the first round? So we're going to publish it for comment for probably a 21-day comment period. And, you know, the board's already resolved this, but we still see value in taking public comment on it. So we're trying, and any advice you have would be great. You know, we're trying to publish it for, you know, comment as far as how can we implement this plan. So I don't see the plan changing markedly between now and when the application window is open on January 12th. But advice and help we can get in implementing it, I think, would be valuable. So I think that's the purpose of the comment period. When we post it for public comment in the next couple days, sorry, we also plan to publish what we'll publish are three documents. One is, and you've seen them, you've seen most of them. One is the process or procedure for how to apply for applicant support. One is the criteria by which applicant support applications will be measured, the criteria against which. And third will be a brief applicant, we're calling it an applicant handbook. So a brief handbook instructing applicants seeking financial support, providing them with direction. So we're going to publish those three things. And so we're working on that handbook now and an announcement. So that's why it's not published right away. So then what do I want to talk about next? I think the gist of the program is this, that
Kurt, have we lost you? Hello? Is anyone else on the call?
Yeah.
Yes, Stefan, David.
Kurt, but we've lost. Sorry, I didn't hear that.
David here. I'll try to get Kurt back on. He was just disconnected from the line. I'll try to get back on. Hold on.
Thank you very much, David. Let's move to the JAS discussion and come back to Kurt if we manage to get him back. Are there any... I'm sorry?
I think he's back on now.
I don't think so. Can you hear me? Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can.
That's bizarre. No, you didn't. I've been here yakking away. So you just think you lost me. So let me briefly go through what the gist of the program is, and that is that applicants for financial support will submit full GTLD applications in the same window as applicants not seeking support. In addition, they will also furnish an application for financial aid or financial support. So they will submit two. Then, while the non-financial support applications are being evaluated in the first round, the financial aid portions of the application of those seeking support will be evaluated in parallel. So think two tracks. One are regular applicants that are evaluated during the initial evaluation round, and then the financial aid applicants will be evaluated against the financial aid criteria only, And then those meeting those that criteria will be evaluated in a subsequent round. And why do we do this? Well, I think there's a couple reasons. One is, you know, operationally it gives us time to hire panelists and get the whole operation in place and provide notice to potential applicants. And two is it provides time to raise additional funds. So if you think of initial evaluation completing in November of 2012, then the financial aid applications completing in November 2012 gives ICANN, a year to raise additional funds to support applicants. So that is the timing. Procedurally, the type of support that is going to be given is this, that the form of financial support given will be a fee reduction from $185,000 to $47,000, so $138,000 fee reduction. And here's the caveats to that. The number of fee reductions given will be limited by the funds available. So if we were to launch the program today and make awards today, we have $2 million at our disposal. But we'll have a year to raise additional funds. There's also a chance, for example, that ICANN could receive, say, auction funds early on and, make a decision that some portion of those would be dedicated toward this financial aid. So we're looking to realize or accumulate as much funds as possible for applicant support in the next year and move forward that way. So that means that there'll have to be a rank ordering of those qualifying for financial support. And that is done using the criteria in the criteria document. And those that meet the threshold for financial support but are not ranked high enough to get the fee reduction will be available for other types of non-financial support, such as staggered fees and translation services, and we went through the JAS recommended non-financial support types and arrived at those two, and have those definitely as part of the plan. And there's also some flexibility in the type of financial aid awarded. So if some entity designates funds for financial support but says they don't want it to go to a fee reduction, they want it to go to something else, then, we'll have that flexibility to still do that. So I think, I think that's the gist of the program. Let me say, what did I skip? Well, I skipped one of the hallmarks of the program. So we want the criteria to be fairly strict, and the JAS working group encouraged us to brook no whiff of gaming. And so the other hallmark of the process is this, that applications for financial assistance will be measured against a threshold that's pretty clearly defined in the criteria that I think can be easily met by bona fide financial assistance applicants, but perhaps not others. And if the threshold is met, then the applicant will be considered for financial aid. If the minimum threshold is not met, the applicant will be excluded from going forward in the new GTLD process. If the threshold is met, then the applicants will be rank ordered according to the criteria, and everyone that there's funds existing for will receive the fee reduction, and those that don't will receive that in-kind support. They can decide to go on at full fee, or they can choose to withdraw and get a refund. And I think the last thing that I didn't say is, I'm sorry for this this is sort of out of order, that at the time of application, when regular applicants are paying their $185,000 fee, the applicants for financial support will pay just the $47,000 fee that they would have to pay in full if they get the financial support. So I hope that was clear.
Thanks, Kurt. Are there any questions for Kurt on the Jazz update we've just received? Wolf.
Yes, thank you. Kurt, just a question to really understand the two ways you just explained for applicants seeking financial support and the others seeking non-financial support. So I guess, you know, most applicants would apply for both, for financial plus non-financial support. So that's what I would expect. And so does this mean that you are treating these two parts in different ways, or rather than the applicants themselves in different ways? So just to understand the way you are doing that.
I probably wasn't clear that all applicants for support will be considered for the non-financial support. And so some of the applicants that qualify, some will get financial support until the money runs out. And all will be can take advantage of the non-financial forms of support. So there's only really one application, that, and all forms of support will be made available to those that qualify.
Okay.
Kurt, this is Wolfgang. I have a question. I was involved in a number of discussions with cities and regions in Germany and in other countries, and a large number of cities discover only now that there are opportunities to get the city name, and they are probably not in a position to do all the work which is needed to write an application until April 15. Are there plans that you give some additional time for some categories of TLDs, in particular GeoTLDs, beyond April 15?
Beyond April 15th?
Yes.
You mean April the 12th, Wolfgang?
Right, April the 12th.
Oh, April 12th, yeah.
Yeah, it's still the same question. So right now, no, Wolfgang, that the application window is closing on April 12th, absent some other input. So ICANN's really received no input from the GAC or the GNSO or other groups that the window should be extended.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Ching.
Thank you, Stefan, and thank you, Kurt, for the explanation. Just a quick question here. Is the support-approved applicant also eligible for the recently developed batching, the secondary timestamp application? Would they be eligible for applying for that? I'm pretty sure that some applicants from the developing region, they also have to deal with a sort of a time-to-market question. So could you perhaps elaborate on that?
Yeah, so thank you for the question. The way the process is written up, and this always gets really complicated at ICANN, that the financial assistance applicants that are awarded financial assistance would be moved to the last batch. But there is an exception to that, and that is if they're in contention with another application, in which case they would get promoted to the batch that where the string in which they're in contention with is situated. And there's even an exception to that, because financial assistance applicants cannot be in the first round because of the timing of their application evaluation. So it would never be earlier than the second batch. So most, the way it's written, and you can comment on this, financial assistance applicants would be in the last batch unless they're in contention. They would get moved up.
Got it. Thank you.
Thanks. Any further questions?
The rationale for that is really that, there should be some fine line demarcation between those paying full fee and those getting financial assistance. So that seemed reasonable. But, again, it's one of those 60-40 decisions that are made. So that would be one of the interesting things to remark on in the public comment period.
Thanks, Kurt. Anything further? I see no hands. I hear no questions. Kurt, thanks very much for joining us this evening and giving us those two updates.
Let me thank the JS members that have participated and it's not all things to all people, but it's a program where we think, $138,000 fee reduction is significant in amount, and we think it's significant that we will have a program in place, and we want to continue to improve it.
Great, Kurt, thanks very much. And we'll now move on to item 8. Item 8 is about the cross-TLD registration scam issue, and this has been discussed before. In recent weeks, we've had correspondence with SSAC on this, and this really is an item where we are aiming to try and move this forward either one way or another, but make sure that this issue doesn't remain open. That is something that the leadership thinks we need to concentrate on all the time, is to try and push these things forwards if we can. Now, we had several suggestions from staff on the best way forward on this specific issue following ESSAC's response that there was nothing further for them to add. The first option that we might want to look at is adding this to the fake renewal notice drafting team's mandate. The second is to continue discussions on this issue with the CCNSO to try and ascertain whether there might be some joint action we might want to consider there. And the third is basically to do nothing and just leave things as they are. So if we're able tonight to try and determine which of those three options, if any, council would be comfortable with pursuing, that would be very useful. Does anyone want to speak to this? Okay. In which case, let me ask the question in a different way and ask the council, would there be any objection? I'll take the simplest option first. Would there be objection to us deciding to do nothing at this stage?
Stefan, it's Joy here.
Yes, Joy.
I just wanted to thank the staff for their work in coming up with some options. And I did wonder about the second option being a possibility in terms of keeping the dialogue going with the CCNSO Council as a topic of mutual interest.
I don't have the answer to that. The staff?
Stefan, it's Margie. What is your question?
Sorry, Margie.
What is your question? Sorry, I didn't understand the question.
Joy's question is there interest from the CCNSO on pursuing this with us? The second option is that we continue talking with them, but are they interested in talking with us on this?
Yes.
Fair question.
Liz.
Yes, okay.
My understanding, yes, it's Liz.
Liz, thank you. Joy, you have your
happy
answer.
To reach out to you and would be inclined to, is my understanding from Bart.
Okay, so would the council feel more comfortable with chasing that option? Can we just ask if anyone disapproves of that option? Okay, well, we've only had one person speak. Joy, am I to understand that considering the CCNSO's interest, you think that option is one that's worth pursuing at this stage?
Yes, I do, Stefan. I think it's, it would be a way to reach out to the CCNSO on an area of mutual interest. I'm not saying it's a high priority issue, but I think if it's one where the council can work together with another body, that seems a constructive way forward.
Okay. Absent any further comments, I suggest that we look at that option. And Glenn, could you please take down an action item for me to contact the CCNSO chair and try and get the discussion going in that direction?
I'll do that, Stefan.
Thank you very much. So let's move on to item 9. This is an important item for us in terms of the way we look at PDPs. It's obviously at the heart of what we do. So as you know, on the last board meeting, the board adopted the new GNSO procedures on PDPs that have come out of the team that Jeff chaired. So we now have a situation where we have a selection of PDPs that are underway that are using the old system, the old rules, and we are in a position to implement the new rules. Marika, who's not able to be on the call this evening, has sent in apologies and has asked Margie to fill in for her on this. Marika sent us a very informative comparison of the old and new PDP rules. I hope you all had a chance to at least glance through it. And I have asked Margie to give us an update or a quick just explanation summary of what is in the new rules, what it might change. And then perhaps if we do, if we're able to, I suggest we discuss how we want to transition the six existing PDPs currently underway to this new system. Those PDPs are IRTP Part C, FIC, who is the Registrar Accreditation Agreement, Uniformity of Contracts. There's a preliminary issue report there being drafted. The UDRP we've just voted on, so that will be added. And Law Enforcement Recommendations, which is pending. So, Margie, please, can I ask you to give us an update, and then we'll open it up for discussion.
Sure. Thank you, Stefan. Essentially, after the board resolution, it referenced the GNSO Council resolution that said that for all ongoing PDPs that are initiated prior to the board's adoption, that the GNSO Council would determine the feasibility of transitioning those to the new procedures. And it essentially the resolution from the council stated that if the council determines that any of them cannot be feasibly transitioned, then the PDPs that are ongoing would be conducted under the old rules rather than the new rules. And so what we did, Stefan just went through the list of topics that are currently in the PDP, various PDP stages. I'm going to pull up right now the document that Marika sent around because I think it gave a really good overview of the differences between the new PDP model and the old PDP model. And she's also, the other thing she's done in this document is highlighted where our existing projects are in the process. And so the idea would be that, assuming the council believes that these PDPs could be transitioned to the new rules, it would not mean that you have to go back and follow the process for the past items, but from here on out, the next steps would be follow the new process versus the old process. So on your screen, you will see the comparison of the old process versus the new process. And I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, but I'll just highlight some of the areas where it's different. And Marika did suggest if there's a need for or interest in a further in-depth analysis, we could perhaps schedule a separate call to do that because it is quite complex. but at least this will give you an initial overview. So as you look at the planning stages for a PDP, we have introduced a new concept that allows for planning purposes where the council can try to gather information and conduct workshops to prior to initiating a PDP. And as many of you recall, we did something like that for the UDRP, where we had workshops and webinars before we even went to the preliminary issue report stage. And then the new PDP, there's differences in who can request a PDP or initiate an issue report. The process is essentially the same as before. There's just a little bit more clarification on how this can be done. So, for example, it talks about the board request, and that is something that the board can request an issue report, and we've already seen that with respect to the RAA, which is why we published the preliminary issue report earlier this week. And so one of the things that might be interesting to the council is that under the new rules, it does indicate that if the board makes a request, the board should provide a mechanism by which the GNSO Council can consult with the board to provide information on the scope, timing, and priority. And that might be something that you guys take away from this as we progress on the board-requested issue report. And then the other thing you want to point out is that there's now this new issue report template. And so as you think about actions in the future, you might, you know, when you're thinking about making a request for an issue report, you might want to take a look at the template and make sure you've covered some of those aspects so that the information that is requested, such as, you know, the name of the requester, additional information and related to the problem. If you scroll further down on the second page of this document, it shows that the various stages of the document of the projects that are currently in existence. So, for example, uniformity of contracts, we're in the process of preparing a preliminary issue report and with respect to that topic. The law enforcement recommendations were already addressed in the preliminary issue report that was published this week. So that's already gone past that point. And then one area where there's a difference, significant difference in the process relates to the timing of when the issue report goes here. Am I still on?
Yeah, you are, Margie.
Oh, okay, I heard somebody. I thought I got disconnected. I apologize. And so the timing for the preliminary issue report is now 45 days from the request instead of the 15 days that was formerly in the bylaws. With the allowance that the staff manager can request more time if there's a reason to have longer time in preparing the preliminary issue report. And then it also has information about the content of the issue report. It's essentially the same as what we had before, so I won't go into that. I just want to highlight, though, that we do have two items that are already out with respect to the preliminary issue report. We've got one for SICUIS and one for the RAA. And the new process calls for a preliminary issue report followed by a public comment period of not less than 30 days. And so that's where we are currently. There's a public comment open for both of those. When the public comment closes, then a final issue report would be delivered to the council, taking into account the information received during the public comment forum. And then if you look at the rules, there's a timeline for when the final issue report should be submitted after the public comment period is closed. Essentially, it's saying that within 30 days of the closing of the public comment form, that the council should expect the final issue report. Then the next thing is the actual initiation of the PDP, and that is essentially the same as what we had before. There is more clarity on the board requested PDPs, and so there's essentially recognition that if the board requests a PDP, such as that happened with the RAA, that the council takes note of it. And there's no vote required in order to initiate the PDP, so that's reflected in the new PDP model. And then there's various things related to the timing of the issue report and when the council needs to consider it. In the old model, the council needed to do it within 15 calendar days, but given the difference in the timing between council meetings, that wasn't really working, And so now there's the notion that the vote on a final issue report needs to be, at the next scheduled council meeting, so long as the motion is, is received, or the issue report is received at least 8 days prior to the council meeting. So it's taking into account the council's current processes with respect to voting. And then there's also a notion that PDPs can be suspended, and there's if there's a reason that a PDP shouldn't be continued or initiated, there's process for that. There wasn't that in the old processes. And then there's more formal documentation of developing a charter. That's now something that is reflected in the new PDP, and given that that's a process that we typically follow. And so it explains what should be in the new charters. And then it mentions that the charters, the thresholds for approving a charter are the same that apply to initiating the PDP. So that's something that was just clarified in the new rules. And then under the old PDP, now I'm moving down to the public notification of the initiation of the PDP. In the past, we would have a public comment period right at the beginning. That's now changed with the public comment period, as I mentioned earlier, right after the preliminary issue report. And then the PDP team can seek public comment as it wishes during the process itself. But we changed the council essentially changed when the public comment, the required public comment periods need to take place. And then there's a mention of the formation of the working group. The only PDP that I think that's currently under process is the IRTP Part C. There, the working group is in the process of working through those issues. And then there's initial report that's normally published for public comment, summary of the public comment, and then a creation of the final issue report. Final report from the PDP, noting that if there's a substantial change between the recommendations between the initial report and the final report, that the work team should consider doing a draft final report in order to get sufficient input if there were significant changes to the recommendations. And then there's also a description of the council deliberation. I think those rules are essentially very similar to what there was before, so there's no significant changes there. And then there's in the board report process, there's now a provision for the council being involved in drafting the board report. So that's something that's new in the PDP that was just adopted. So that is, I think, a useful thing, and the council will now see that as a new process that will be followed. I think on approval, I don't recall anything that was that significantly different. The voting is essentially the same, although I think we did change one vote, added a vote of more than two. Oh, I'm sorry. This is the vote. The board approval process is essentially the same. It didn't change that much. And then implementation, there's the notion that in the new PDP process, the GNSO Council can create an implementation group that would create a plan, and that's something that's optional. It's not required in all PDPs. And then there's finally the notion that you can terminate a PDP prior to a final report if the circumstances, are appropriate. For example, if there's stalemate or changing circumstances, or just lack of community volunteers. So there's a notion now that it's appropriate to terminate a PDP in process if these circumstances arise. And then there's also clarification of how policies that are adopted under the new process can be approved. If there's changes that happen before implementation, there's one process. After implementation, a new PDP would be required to amend the policies that emerged from that PDP. And then finally, the notion that there should be periodic assessments of approved policies. I think that's something that most everyone agrees is a good idea. And so there's a recommendation that all PDPs are reviewed from time to time. I'm sorry, policies that emerge from a PDP. And I think that's all. With that, I'll open it up to any questions.
Yeah, thanks, Margie, for that update. I don't see any questions. There is one question which we must ask ourselves, and that is how to transition the existing PDPs that I described earlier on. As Margie pointed out, in Marika's document highlighted at each stage, at each relevant stage that they're in now, Marika's put the PDPs that the GNSO is currently working on in that document, so that's pretty useful. And I think the basic suggestion is that we should transition whenever possible. So if, for example, we're working currently on an issue report, once that's been done and we're about to go into the PDP stage, then we should probably transition that group at that point into the new procedures. As Margie mentioned earlier on, there's no intent to redo anything. There is an intent to go about this logically and transition when it's feasibly and possible to do so, when it's easy to do so as well. So are there any comments or questions on all of that? Jeff?
Yeah, I'll just support what you said. I think most of these, it's not, you know, there's not too many dramatic changes, and most of the things that are recommended are things that we do already, you know, that we've just worked into the process throughout the years. So I agree, if you're in the middle of an issue report, then, you know, you continue that issue report. You don't necessarily have to worry about a preliminary issue report, although we've been doing that anyway. And then when it comes time to the vote for the PDP, you know, you have the added vote of voting on the charter, which wasn't required. So I think it'll work itself out, and we should just take it PDP by PDP, and unless anyone objects, just apply the new rules to the next logical stage.
Thanks, Jeff. Anyone else? Okay, well, in that case, let's just make a note that we are looking to transition all of these at the next logical stage, and perhaps we can get some help from Marika in that, just to point out in a short message to the council, whenever she can, on the council list, what each for each of these PDPs, what the next logical step is. And that should be communicated to each group as well, I think. Okay, let's move on to AOB. We have three AOB items tonight. The first one is on the response to the board regarding our input on the implementation of SAC 051. And I've actually forgotten who was going to give us an update on that. Was it you, Margie?
No, it's Liz.
That's Liz. Apologies, Liz.
That's okay. So you all maybe recall that there was a Security and Stability Advisory Committee report that made some recommendations, including some taxonomy recommendations and urging the ICANN community to evaluate and adopt a replacement WHOIS protocol that supports the query and display of internationalized registration data and a uniform and standard framework for accessing that data. That's kind of the upshot of what the SAC report did. And then in Dakar, the board asked they first asked staff to produce in consultation with the community a roadmap for the coordination of the technical and policy discussions necessary to implement the recommendations outlined in SAC 51. But they also directed staff to forward SAC 51 to the supporting organizations and advisory committees for their advice, if any, with regard to implementing the SAC recommendations. So that's been done, and the board is seeking the SOs and ACs advice in lieu of that advice, which I don't think has been developed, I had suggested a memo that I've drafted and sent to the list that highlights two pending activities that the GNSO Council working groups are involved in that I think are directly related to the questions that the board is seeking input on that are directly related both to the SAC 51 recommendations that I read or alluded to and the request from the board for staff to consult with the community on the development of this roadmap. And so what I was suggesting in response to this request from the board would be just an update that you have available to you on those two work areas that I think are relevant, one being the fairly nascent work efforts of the WHO is Service Requirement Survey Working Group that's attempting to develop the survey, although they've been having some difficulty so far measuring the level of support, but the survey would measure this level of support for various technical requirements outlined in a WHO is Service Requirements report that staff wrote at the GNSO Council's request back in 2010. Now we're seeking input from the community on those requirements, potential technical requirements, which could conceivably then be incorporated into a new protocol. And then I'm sure you all are familiar with also the draft final report of the GNSO-SAC Internationalized Registration Data Working Group, which has examined various display standards for internationalized registration data and looked at different models or translating and transliterating contact names to enhance the user experience. So this memo is just intended to inform the board, to be responsive to the board, I should say, in its request for some input from the council and to perhaps inform the staff in the production of this roadmap. But I think just to underscore the two significant work efforts that are going on in the council now that relate to the potential development of a protocol. I think those are the primary reasons why you have dedicated the resources, the community resources and the staff resources that you have to those two efforts, and that it's important to sort of go on record with the council's commitment to the level of participation that you've engaged in. So that was my thinking behind it. And it's voluntary, and it's also any of the language in it could certainly be changed. It's just intended to be informative. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Liz. Let me add to what you just said that in the discussions we had in Dakar, I think there was consensus from the new council that was voted in Dakar, or that was seated, sorry, in Dakar, that it is good when we can to make sure we communicate more clearly to bodies such as the board and others. So I think we should be thankful of Liz's initiative to prepare this draft and allow us to possibly send it to the board. The idea here was just to get an idea from the council on whether there would be any opposition to me sending this document to the board on behalf of the council. So can I just get a sense of that? Would anyone be opposed to me taking this drafted this document as drafted and sending it to the board? I hear no opposition, so Glenn, please take down an action item for me to do that.
I will do, Stephen.
Thank you very much, Glenn. Thank you, Liz. Let's move on to an update, back to Margie on an update on the RAA, please.
Well, thank you,
Stephen. Just on the negotiations. Sorry, Margie, to interrupt. I was just going to say on the negotiations that have been going on.
Yes. We can actually cover both, God, and just get a
overview or discussion of the issue report as well, because there's two projects going on with respect to the RAA, and I went through more detail on our call last month. But essentially, it's a two-track process. One is the negotiations, and they have been underway since November 18th. There was an announcement recently that we published that a community wiki was established, and I encourage all of you to take a look at the community wiki, because what it does is it posts the reports from each of the negotiation meetings, highlighting the actual issues that are being discussed, and it also provides just the general status of each of the issues. And so as you glance through the community wiki, there's a tremendous amount of information about, you know, what's on the table, what's being discussed, where they are with respect to each of those issues. And so I encourage you to take advantage of that. The reason we went through the through posting on the wiki is because you can also use the comment button on each issue page to provide any information that you might want to share for the negotiation team to take a look at. So that's just something for you to look at, and certainly, you know, I encourage you to take the time to look at those issues. That's project one. The second project is as part of the resolution in Dakar, the board asked for an issue report on the RAA, and specifically related to the remaining items that aren't addressed through the negotiation process. And so because the board resolution talked about this in terms of urgency and immediate action and wanting the council to move quickly, we published the preliminary issue report on all of the negotiation topics. These include the law enforcement recommendations, and it also includes the high and medium priority topics from the RAA drafting team's final report. And so the idea is that once this was published and it's open for public comment until January 13th, and then the public comment period will close, the summary of that will happen, and then a final issue report will be published prior to the Costa Rica meeting. And it's felt that at that time there may be more clarity as to what items are actually, you know, being successfully negotiated through the negotiation process, and some of those amendment topics might drop out and there may not be a need to have a PDP on each of those items. But because we don't have enough information yet as to where the negotiations will go, the preliminary issue report covers all of those topics. And so I just wanted to highlight that these are two separate tracks. Both of them have the ability for counselors and the public to provide input either through the public comment forum or through the wiki itself where there's a comment feature. And the last thing I want to point out too is the preliminary – I'm sorry. The last thing I wanted to point out was the preliminary issue report also addresses the GNSO Council motion that related to specific law enforcement recommendations. As you recall, before the Dakar meeting, the Council had approved an issue report submitted by the Registrar Stakeholder Group for just certain of the law enforcement recommendations. And that motion also included a request for a freedom of expression impact analysis that came from the non-commercial group. And the preliminary issue report that I published this week included that. So the issue report addresses both the board request and the GNSO Council request from prior to Dakar. And I think that's all right now for my update. I'd be happy to take questions. It looks like Wendy has a question.
Yeah, thanks. Wendy, please.
Yeah, thanks very much, Margie. I had a specific – I couldn't find the comment button on the wiki, although I spent some time looking at it. I couldn't find any way to add comments.
Wendy, have you done it while you're logged in? You need to be logged in.
I have, yes.
Okay. I will check with IT. That was one of my instructions to them, was to make sure we had a comment button. So we'll make sure to do that, and I'll send you an email to confirm that.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Thanks. Anything else from anyone? Okay, Margie, thanks a lot for that update. And the last item on our agenda today is an update from Jeff on the work currently going on with the protection of Olympic Committee and Red Cross names. So, Jeff, please.
Sure. So we in Dakar, we had discussed this item, and we actually had a conversation with the GAC on some questions that we had on the initial proposal by the GAC regarding the Olympic and Red Cross marks. During the meeting in Dakar, they the GAC had actually submitted a Q&A document, a question and answer document, which actually addressed some of the questions that we had. Since then, you know, we asked for volunteers, and there's a small group of us that have volunteered to informally have discussions with the goal of basically providing advice to the council as to, you know, our thoughts and recommendations regarding, one, what we should be telling the board or what we should be recommending to the board, and two, what we should be recommending or our thoughts straight directly to the GAC. And, again, it's an informal group. It's not anything under a formal PDP or anything like that. The group is open, and we've had a number of people that have volunteered or have signed up for the mailing list that are either observers or interested parties. We made a decision on the – we had a call, our first call yesterday, and we have our next call on January 11th. The goal is to make progress so that we can have an interim call with persons from the GAC and people from the GNSO that want to participate at some point between the now and the Costa Rica meeting, or say between January 11th and the Costa Rica meeting, so that we can make our discussions in Costa Rica much more productive rather than, you know, letting the GAC know just at that meeting what direction we're heading in. I think we had a really good discussion yesterday. There was a document that was sent around to the group listing a bunch of the questions that had come out of Dakar that weren't necessarily addressed through the question and answer document that we got from the GAC. And the I guess the action item from yesterday is that the people that were on the call and others is to go back to your groups, get some feedback so that we can really have a productive conversation on January 11th. I will note that there were not that many people that showed up on the call. I want to thank the people that did show up, but also kind of put in a word for those groups that did not show up at all. And if you don't show up on the next one, I will call you out and to the rest of the council. But it would be great, honestly, just that we could have participation from all of the affected groups. Any questions on that? All right, Stefan, back to you.
Hello?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. We can now.
Yeah.
Okay, I must have been disconnected. I was asking you, Jeff, I sent in some comments before the call by email, just wondering if those were useful in any way.
Yeah, we discussed those, and as well as the thoughts from the group, and we're encouraging the rest of the group, all of the group, to go back to other members of their constituency, stakeholder groups, to submit comments like you did. And we've also came up with a few questions that we've asked Margie to go back to ICANN staff to just get a little more context for what the ICANN board had in their resolution in Singapore.
Thanks, Jeff. Bill.
Hi. I'm just looking at this letter that Kieran posted on his website from the United Nations organizations, 23 international organizations, citing the decision to extend protection to Red Cross and Olympic Committee, which I thought was interesting, and asking for special exemptions. Is the group going to try and look at this broadening of the discussion that many of us feared would be a likely outcome? Thanks.
I can't speak for the group, but the discussion that we had yesterday centered only on the Olympic Committee, the Olympic Marks and the Red Cross, and the Q&A with the GAC. That document that they gave us specifically said that the proposal only relates to the Olympic and Red Cross marks. So until someone, unless and until a group actually makes some sort of formal proposal and the board acknowledges that formal proposal and sends that to the GNSO, unless that happens, then, you know, it's not my intention for the group to delve beyond those two sets of marks.
Mm-hmm. Well, that So they've written, though, to Beckstrom, Crocker, and Pritz asking for this. So presumably at some point it's going to have to be looked at, I think.
Right.
Just wondering.
Who else is speaking?
I just want to, go further with the issue raised by Bill. This is Wolfgang. It's 28 intergovernmental organizations, and I think it's very seriously, and certainly we have to take a position, and the includes organizations like NATO, OECD, the IMF, the United Nations, UNESCO, the World Health Organization, World Intellectual Property Organization, World Trade Organization. So they are all asking the same question, and so probably this came in the very last minute, and this is a little bit related to my previous questions to cities, because a lot of organizations, you know, which were ignorant to what ICANN is doing the last, let's say, 10 years, realize now that they will be affected by the move into this new program. And so they are very late starters, and the question is whether they have now to pay a bill for being ignorant the last 10 years, or whether their concerns can be included into a program which has already started. So I think this will create probably some problems. I do not have an answer. I do not have a recommendation how to react. But I see, you know, that more trouble will come around next corner.
Wolfgang, it's not a question. It's a comment, right?
Yes.
Right. Because when you say we should do something, I wasn't clear on whom we was. Certainly if it's the group that Jeff has just updated us on, that's not their mandate. If it's we, the GNSO Council, the GNSO, the ICANN community, then it's a wider we, obviously.
Yes, I wanted to raise this as an issue where everybody, as a council member, but also beyond the GNSO Council, you know, should think about it and to say, you know, what, you know, if this becomes a very practical issue that we have to take a position, what the position would be. So this will not go away. And sooner or later, we have to take a position, not now, not here, but we should be prepared, and we should start thinking about it.
Thanks, Wolfgang. Any further comments? In which case, I will thank you all for your participation this evening. We have 4 minutes left to go on the call, so I think we've kept good timing. Thanks to all the guests that have spoken to us this evening and taken the time to do so, and speak to you all again very soon, and speak to you on the list. Thanks very much. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thanks, Stefan.
Thanks, bye.